Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levin.
Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. I'm your host, Mark Levin, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Do you remember back in the old days when the United States was the leader of the free world? They would even call the president of the United States the leader of the free world. Indeed, the leader of the world, the lone superpower, the one indispensable nation, we were called. Countries looked to us. They couldn't get together without us. They needed our alliances. NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Alliance, North Atlantic Treaty Organization, was the solid foundation of the West. The United States was the country, the great democracy, the great beacon of free press, the one who told others to respect human rights. Remember those good old days? Seems so long ago. It was, 5 months ago now. Well, those days are gone, at least for the next 4 years. And I would say that the nail was closed in the coffin of the death of America as a leading world power, as the leading world power, when the United States pulled out of the Paris Accords. The Paris Agreement, the great climate change agreement, is, because the Paris Agreement is still continuing among 194 nations, really every nation on the planet except Nicaragua, who didn't join because they didn't think it went far enough, Syria, the government that is busy massacring its own citizens, and can't be bothered with climate change because it's busy murdering people. And us. Everywhere else. Yes, even North Korea, Russia, Iran, Somalia. You name your dystopian hell, and they at least believe that the world should stop the increase in temperatures that scientists say will lead to global catastrophe. Now, the Paris Agreement is both more and less than you might think. It's less than you might think, and therefore less onerous than you might think, in the sense that it really doesn't have any stick other than countries complaining. Each country is to set their own standards and as to the amount of carbon pollution, and then strive to meet them. And then every 5 years, the 194 nations of the world are to meet again to try to get even better standards, all to try to stop global warming before it hits that 2 degree centigrade mark, or if you like thinking in Fahrenheit, approximately 5 degrees. You see, when the entire globe gets 5 degrees warmer, sorry for using Fahrenheit, but, you know, America's backwards in lots of ways. The rest of the world uses centigrade. When the world gets 5 degrees Fahrenheit hotter, it turns into what scientists believe will be an irreversible process. See, the ice in the Arctic, or sitting on top of massive land masses like Greenland, or, frankly, like Antarctica at the southern end of the planet, when the ice starts melting, it's one thing to be an iceberg in the ocean. That's kind of floating on top of the ocean. It's displacing with its weight the same amount of water that it would take place if it melted. But once you start getting ice melting over land, and actually coming off the land, running off the land, it, of course, adds to the sea level and causes sea levels to rise worldwide. Also, the temperatures, the scientists will tell us, when they reach 2 degrees centigrade, 5 degrees over, there becomes an irreversible continuing process. The ice doesn't harden like it used to. It doesn't form. Ice has been formed for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, actually for hundreds of thousands, millions of years. Doesn't quite form as strongly. I mean, you know this, right? You put something in a refrigerator, you look at a freezer and something's been frozen for 10 years. The ice is pretty thick. But if you stick it in there for, a couple weeks, it's not the same. Doesn't have that strength of something that's been frozen solid for all those years. Plus, then the sun reflects and makes everything a lot worse, leading not only to the greatest storms we've seen, but to drought worldwide. It actually makes it harder to grow food. Now, every nation in the world understands this. As I said, Nicaragua didn't join the Paris Agreement because they thought it was too weak, and Syria didn't do it because, well, everyone's dying there at the moment. But the United States is no small country in the world. In fact, we are the largest per capita carbon polluter in the world, by far. We're the second largest in the world entirely. And some will say, aha, but China has more carbon pollution than we have. And that's true. China also has four times the people that we have. For us to complain too much about China is kind of like a four-year-old complaining that his daddy is getting a bigger portion of meat at the meal. If the four-year-old weighs 50 pounds and his dad weighs 200 pounds, you can quickly see that the child eating at the rate his father does will soon have a weight problem. China has a billion more people than the United States. It has four times the population of the United States. Its per capita carbon pollution is much less. Furthermore, China is taking real steps to limit its carbon pollution. It's canceling more than 100 coal plants. It is becoming the world leader in clean energy. And as anyone who studied this issue at all knows, coal jobs are dramatically decreasing, have long before the Paris Agreement. They're less than two-thirds of what they used to be. Actually, less than a third, two-thirds down from what they used to be. Whereas green energy jobs are growing by leaps and bounds. This is the future. This is what countries are looking to do. So, how does the Paris Accord work? As I said, it really is, one could argue, smaller and bigger than you might imagine. Smaller than you might imagine because the targets are voluntary. Each country picks their own. You know, when you're trying to get 194 nations, virtually the entire world, really the entire world, to sign on to an agreement, then, you know, you can't make it too hard. So people choose their own standards and then strive to meet them. Then they report publicly on whether they've met them or not. And then every 5 years or so, it's reevaluated to see whether we need more stringent standards. Everybody reports publicly to everybody else. So what's the penalty for not complying? There's no trade sanctions. There's no world policeman that puts a country in jail. You could say, what's the big deal? What's the big deal of the Paris Agreement? And in some sense, you're right. In that sense, frankly, it wasn't very onerous for the United States. All Trump had to do was not meet the targets, and he would get nothing more than a wagging finger from the countries around the globe. So why does it matter that he pulled out? Why is it so catastrophic? Because, as I said, the Paris Agreement is smaller and larger than you might imagine. Smaller in the sense that it has no real penalty, but larger because anytime the entire world commits itself to an undertaking, the power of peer pressure, the power of one country pointing at the other country, the power of saying, look, you met your targets, but we didn't meet ours, is powerful. I mean, even our president seems to respond to criticism very strongly, right? Criticism matters. Opprobrium matters. And in this case, we have a measurable standard, and every country's up to the task, and everyone's watching. And for the United States to say, you know what, we're going to pollute as much as we want, and the rest of you have to take care of the globe. Well, that's a clear incentive for everyone else to cheat and or abandon the agreement. But to the rest of the world's credit, they're simply not going away. When the United States fails to exercise leadership, other countries step in, as German Chancellor Angela Merkel said. Angela Merkel said that the days are left behind. I'm paraphrasing. I don't have the quote exactly before me. But the days are gone when we could completely trust our alliance across the river. There are days when we have to look out for ourselves. France made clear, reaching out actually to Americans, to move to France, to American scientists, to those of us who believe in green, clean energy, to those of us who don't want the catastrophe of climate change, to move to France, to move to a leader in the free world. So Europe is bypassing us. China is bypassing us. And the president, well, we all know what makes him act. You want to get something done? You want Donald Trump to do you a favor? Just say a bunch of ridiculous praising lies that you don't believe in. Tell him he's the best, the greatest, the most powerful. Tell him he's got nice hair. Tell him anything. Heck, the Saudis gave him a medal. And lo and behold, they don't look and see about Saudi treatment of women in Saudi Arabia, or the way they treat gay people, or the way they, frankly, finance terrorism around the globe. But French President Macron gives a little back to Donald. By the way, did you see this? This is really cool. Did you see where he was walking toward Donald? This whole group of people, there was Donald Trump and Angela Merkel and a bunch of world leaders, and he walks straight at Donald Trump and then, greets and hugs Chancellor Merkel. That was really funny. But, oh, no, Donald Trump doesn't like to be punked. He will destroy the world rather than have someone insult him, much like you would think a 3-year-old tyrant king might do. Donald only cares about Donald. Donald doesn't care about the globe. And the world will remember Paris, even if the United States does not. To our credit as Americans, and of course the majority of us rejected this incompetent, narcissistic lunatic who's running our country, to our credit, local and state governments are stepping up. Even the mayor of Pittsburgh, and when Donald Trump famously said, I ran to run Pittsburgh, not Paris, even the mayor of Pittsburgh basically called Donald Trump an idiot, said we have to be worried about climate change. This is your chance to tell your local government to push back. In Virginia, we have elections right here in November. If you vote for the Democrats, you are pushing back against Donald Trump. States can have carbon targets. We can do things as a state. The irony is that our Constitution was set up with all kinds of protections. And even though, yeah, the president and Congress and even the Supreme Court are largely controlled by the right, we still have states, what Jefferson called the laboratories of democracy. In the 1960s, the states were horribly discriminatory. They used states' rights in order to discriminate against African Americans. And the federal government had to come in and set things right. Well, now the times are the reverse. The federal government is a mess. It is incompetent. It doesn't know which way is up. It's led by a child tyrant. But the states, now, will have their chance to step up to the plate, to exert their strength. States like California. States like, come November, hopefully, my state, the Commonwealth of Virginia. Call in if you like, 888-48-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Council.
And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. Scientists say that we could achieve without change, we could achieve 5 degrees Fahrenheit increase in global temperatures or 2 degrees centigrade in 20 years. In fact, we're already at 0.8 degrees centigrade, so we're already about 40% of the way there, if nothing is done. And at 2 degrees centigrade, climatologists tell us that's when the bad stuff really begins. That's when these changes become irreversible. That's when you have the massive droughts and sea level rise and worldwide problems that we've already seen grow with storms, and that's where we kind of reach the point of no return. It was the purpose of the Paris Climate Accord to keep us below that 2 degree centigrade number. And as I noted, virtually the entire world agreed. Except now, not us. Now, this wasn't an anti-American agreement. Trump seems to think that the entire world is out to get him. Well, I'm out to get you, Donald. But the entire world, in signing the Paris Agreement 5 years ago, really wasn't thinking about you. Believe it or not, the world does not revolve around you, Donald. But somehow he twisted it to be that way. And now the whole world is looking for new leadership. Let me go to the phone lines, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Nick, line 3 in Arcata, California. Hey, Nick, how are you?
I'm doing good, Mark. I when I hear you, I'm usually working, and so I don't have a chance to give you a call but and respond, because you always have some great subjects.
Thank you.
Anyway, this is the Paris Accords. Let's face it, it really gave us a black eye on the world stage, okay? We're really not leading the world anymore. I mean, he single-handedly did this. And now, you know, we're looking at Merkel, we're looking at France, or,
Macron.
Who knows? China will probably even step up, right?
That's right. I mean, even Russia.
Russia has signed the Paris Agreement.
And certainly, he's done everything he can to please Russia. We'll talk about that later in the broadcast. But, yes, we are alone in the world now, completely alone. We are with Syria.
But you mentioned the states. And let's face it, I'm from California, right? So Jerry Brown, he came right out. I mean, literally, he came right out and said, we don't care. We're still going to do this. And we are, 1/6 the world's economy or something like this.
1/6 of the nation's economy.
I mean, it's a very dynamic state.
California's 1/6 of the nation's economy, not the world's economy. But still, yes,
nations.
Very,
okay,
very
nations.
Powerful.
Okay. Well, whatever. I mean, it's got...
That's a lot.
And but you got Washington, same thing. Oregon, same thing. Although, they're more rural and what have you. And you've got literally all the blue states were going to lead anyway. The red states were going to drag their feet because golly gee, this is a conspiracy and it's terrible for us. Because the last thing we want to do is get rid of coal jobs that nobody needs, right?
Well, the irony is that the coal jobs are going away long before this agreement because they're bombing mountains now. And it's a lot cheaper to bomb mountains and fire your employees than it is to actually send the workers in anyway. So the companies themselves have been firing the workers, and that way they can bomb the mountains. Sure, it leads to poisons in our rivers, but, they don't care about that. They don't drink the water. So, that was already happening. In fact, even the coal industry, they don't claim that the Paris Agreement affects their jobs. No one believes that except the people who believe, every lie Donald Trump says. Stay on with me, Nick, if you like. Others can join in. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Then we'll move on and talk a little bit more about, Russia. We'll be right back right after this.
Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levin. There's not just a movie, Remember Paris. I think people are going to remember the Paris Agreement as the step when Donald Trump finally took the United States out of leadership of the world. I mean, it was shocking enough, arguably more shocking, when he was silent on whether or not we would keep our NATO commitments. Article 5 of NATO, of course, is the heart of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. The idea that if one country is invaded, we will defend them all. It is the reason why the Baltic states, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, formerly part of the Soviet Union, after being conquered by Stalin, were so glad to be part of the NATO alliance. They knew they'd be protected. Indeed, it kept the peace among members of the alliance for the last 70 years or so. Donald Trump was like, NATO, who needs it? Angela Merkel isn't praising me. Macron is being aggressive and he's not letting me beat him up when I shake his hand. And, well, we all know the president of Montenegro was in my way when I shoved him aside. They're not being nice to me. I can't walk with them. They mock me. I'm taking the golf cart. Who was nice to Donald? Saudi Arabia was nice to Donald. They let him play evil world leader and stick his hand on that glowing orb, that globe. They gave him a pretty necklace. See, what foreign leaders understand and what dictators are willing to do is if you just simply praise this thin-skinned, narcissistic moron, well, he'll give you what you want. But if you don't, if you actually defend the world and talk logically and treat this two-year-old like the way he acts, and I want to be clear, many, many two-year-olds are far better behaved, so I don't mean to insult all toddlers. Well, apparently, U.S. foreign policy is dictated by whether or not you treat Donald Trump as the North Koreans treat Kim Jong-un. And I want you to think about Kim Jong-un. I want you to think about whether the people in North Korea believe what they're saying. Apparently, their dictator never has to go to the bathroom. He never urinates or defecates. That might explain his physique. But he was born magically. I forget all the things they say. But the question is, do North Koreans actually believe this? See, I don't think they do. I think people know they're lying. They're lying because, well, if they don't praise the dictator incessantly, they might be killed. So they do it. But then it comes, well, who are the people in North Korea actually believing the nonsense? You know, if you're just born into all of this, you might believe it's true. Ancient Egypt believed the pharaoh was literally divine, was the son of the divine. So, are Trumpists really that stupid? Do they really believe Donald's lies? Do they not see through the corruption and the nepotism and, I don't know, all our giveaways to Russia? Do they not see this? You know, for 60 years, really ever since the McCarthy era, Republicans have been calling Democrats soft on communism, soft on Russia, when really Democrats didn't want much to do with Russia. They just wanted more socialism in the United States, Social Security, Medicare, universal health care. That had nothing to do with the Soviet Union. The reason why we were anti-communist, my friends, was not because socialism was a bad idea. We have Social Security. What we have is the former Soviet Union with its gulags and its occupying forces and its mass murder was a problem. It wasn't communism per se. It was the Russian dictatorship, which continues to this day. Can you imagine if a Democrat did what Trump did with Russia? We'll move on in that in just a minute, but first I want to get to my friend Julian, line 3 in Alexandria, Virginia. Hey, Julian, how are you, sir?
Hi, Mark. Great. Did you know that when Kim Jong-un played his first round of golf, like Donald, he got 11 holes in one?
Yes. That's exactly right. The question is, when North Koreans say that, do they actually believe it? And my guess is that 90% of them, at least the ones saying it, don't believe it. Certainly anyone who's met the man doesn't believe it. But, you know, there could be some benighted people in North Korea who don't get a free press or who only listen to the North Korean press who might actually believe that. And I wonder if the same is true of the Trumpists, if they actually believe the nonsense he spouts, because all they're doing is looking at right-wing media sources.
And Breitbart and Fox News. But can I change the subject and ask you just 2 points, because I like to listen to you, not to talk myself. But first one, can you emphasize the economic case climate mitigation measures and green energy and renewables and so on, and how positive this is for the American economy and the world economy? And secondly, can you explain something that we don't hear about so much, unless you're a bit of a political junkie, the way the Koch brothers' money has turned the GOP in about 10 years from recognition of climate change into climate deniers?
Two very good questions, Julian. I'll be happy to answer both of them. First, I should note that when I said that California was not a sixth of the world's economy, I just got a note from a caller who said that California is actually the sixth largest economy in the world, which is not a sixth of the world, but it is the sixth largest economy apparently in the world, so I want to make that clear. I don't know what it is in the United States. I know it's about an eighth of the U.S. population, so I assume it's about a sixth of the U.S. economy, but I will...
United Kingdom after Brexit.
Yeah. So anyway, I will check to see what percentage of the American economy it is. Julian, so in terms of the economics of it all, fossil fuels have been dying for quite some time, particularly coal, more than any other fossil fuel. I mean, coal used to be the single greatest source of energy, and more than all others put together in the United States and around the world. So much so that, there was soot that used to pile out, certainly in Britain and the United States. There was a reason why. And China, frankly, you can go to China and look just 10, 20 years ago at the massive pollution there. And that's caused by coal and global warming. But coal has been on the downside. And partly that's due to other fossil fuels like natural gas, but it's also due to renewables, solar and wind and nuclear energy and hydroelectric energy and geothermal energy and a whole bunch of other energy sources that turn out to be cheaper, not to mention solar, which gets better year after year after year. Solar, of course, when the sun shines, it's far cheaper in energy. It costs nothing. The sun is there. The problem in solar, of course, is the batteries, but the batteries are getting better and better. Transmission lines are getting better and better. And it's interesting because the United States used to lead the way. In the 70s and 80s, we were the first to develop a fuel solar cell. Now we're dramatically left behind by China and by Europe. But even in the United States, there are some 70,000 renewable energy jobs. And coal jobs are dwindling fast. We're talking less than that. I know that in Virginia, they've declined some 80 or 90%. So one is on the way out. You know, it's interesting when they talk about coal jobs. You know, no one is banning coal. It's just simply not economically productive anymore. It kind of reminds me, frankly, about the people that said, you're taking away horsemen's jobs when the car came, right? And it's true. When the car came, it hurt a whole kinds of jobs, not just the people that drove horse-drawn carriages. The blacksmiths who made the horseshoes, the people who cleaned up the manure in the street. Think about the manure in the street, folks, 150 years ago, because, horses all over the place, right? Think of just the smell of your city streets back in the 1890s, early 1900s. But those people all lost their jobs. But the car industry, the automobile industry, created many, many, many more jobs, and frankly, not just the jobs in the automobile industry, but created whole new, quicker ways for us to get from place to place. And then horseback did. Now, we didn't ban horses. You could still ride horses. It's just not very common anymore. It's not very economically productive. You tend to do it just because, well, it's fun to ride a horse. So, you know, the future is here. And it's a question of whether the United States is going to be part of that future or not. And as the other caller pointed out, some states like California are very much part of that future, and some states are not. Just to compare, for example, even states like Georgia and Arizona, red states, Republican-run states, allow people to use solar energy to capture electricity and to even sell it back to the grid so that instead of having electric bills where you pay a certain amount every month, they have electric checks where you get a certain amount every month because your fuel cells, not only your solar cells, not only warm your house, they also warm up everybody around you. Can you imagine? Not instead of having an electric bill, having an electric check. So it's not just the jobs. It helps in all kinds. Frankly, it helps the grid, right? You don't have to build all these new transmission lines if you have local sources of energy, namely a bunch of solar cells on the roof. I mean, what's your roof doing anyway? So, but Georgia and Arizona have done this. Virginia has not. Virginia has rejected bills to do just that because certain energy companies in Virginia and certain politicians that they give campaign money to, well, they've rejected that. Now, we're going to keep trying. We Democrats in Virginia are going to keep trying if we ever get a Democratic majority. And then we're going to go very far in terms of clean energy. But the answer is certainly not the economy. Your second question, Julian, remind me what it was.
It was about the way the Koch brothers, money,
oh, right, the Koch brothers.
And others have turned the GOP from recognizing climate change into Kool-Aid drinking climate deniers.
Well, it all goes down really to money and politics, right? I mean, the heart of the problem we have is when two brothers, each worth I don't know how many hundreds of millions of dollars each, have more power than literally tens of millions of Americans, then we've got a problem. But Koch Industries makes a lot of money by polluting, right? They make money by dumping pollution in our air, in our water. And so to the extent that they don't have regulations on carbon, regulations on pollution, they make more money. But here's the thing. If you pollute, you're causing damage to everyone around you, right? So it's very simple. It's like saying, well, I want you to bear the weight. I want you, the person who drinks the water, the person who breathes the air, I want you to pay for our profits, our production. It's a direct transfer of wealth from the pollutee to the polluter. And then the Koch brothers take a small portion of that wealth and give it to members of Congress or state legislators, the polluted, and then the polluted vote for legislation to help the polluter continue polluting. And who loses? Well, those of us who are being polluted against. If people had to pay for their, you know, my mom always said, you make a mess, you clean it up, right? If people had to pay for the mess that they themselves made, it would be a little more expensive, but at least people would realize the true cost. Because the true cost of coal, for example, is not just ruining the climate. It's also blowing up mountains and putting poison in our rivers. So the Koch brothers started really the big election where they started doing this is back in 2010. And they were very smart to focus on state legislatures. The Democrats were only focusing or mostly focusing on the national level, on the federal level, on the president and Congress. And they neglected state legislators. And, okay, I'm biased. I sit in a state legislature. I'm a Virginia state delegate. But Democrats lost almost 1,000 legislative seats in the last 10 years. We went from being two-thirds of all state legislators to about one-third of all state legislators. And that makes a difference. People say, well, why is Congress gerrymandered? It's not because of anything the president or Supreme Court or even Congress did. It's because of what the state legislatures did. The state legislatures draw district lines. And according to the Constitution, every 10 years under the census, we have to redraw the lines. Well, the Koch brothers smartly did it in 2010. The census was in 2010. Redistricting occurred in 2011. And, well, we've seen the results of that ever since. Heck, in 2012, more Americans voted for Democrats in the House of Representatives than voted for Republicans. But Republicans still continue to control the House, because they drew the lines. We've seen what this anti-majoritarian thing does. It's not just gerrymandering. It's the Electoral College. 3 million more Americans chose Hillary Clinton. The loser in that election, Donald Trump, got to be president, all because of, you know, where he put his votes. I believe one person, one vote. I think every American should have equal rights under the law. In fact, I would argue it's required by the 14th Amendment to the Constitution. And the battlefront right now, my friends, we're going to fight in 2020. And sure, we're going to fight in 2018. But the first fight, coming back to home state privilege again, it's right here in Virginia. It's in 2017. It's this November. It's just a few months away. Control for the state legislature. determines control of the national legislature, determines control of the country. So thank you for your call, Julian. I really appreciate it. Folks, if you want to call in, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
Never confuse Mark Levin with right-winger Mark Levin. The second E stands for empathy, which the other Mark lacks. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. Speaking of my home state of Virginia, there is a primary a week from tomorrow. If you live in the Commonwealth of Virginia, you can choose among Democratic candidates or Republican candidates for governor or lieutenant governor, and I encourage everyone to vote. Got a bunch of callers on the line. Let me try to get to both of you. David in line one in San Francisco. Go ahead, David.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Mark. I was interested in I'm glad you were talking about the alternative energy, because in the long run, there are places like Arizona, you know, nothing but heat and sun.
Yep.
And they actually were trying to outlaw putting solar on their roofs, and they were going to punish people that did by charging them $50 a month. I mean, can you imagine the insanity of the Arizona
legislation? Yeah, it's exactly counterproductive.
Absolutely.
It's exactly counterproductive. It would be like saying if you don't ride horses but drive a car in 1914, you know, we're going to pay the special tax because you get in the way of our horses.
Right.
It's definitely not the future. It's the past.
Sure. And what's even better about solar at this point is, just like a printing press, can slap off a billboard, basically, you can make solar panels pretty much like a printing press. It's like you press electronic chips, same deal, just bigger. And those new solar panels, an average nuclear power plant is about a gigawatt, and they, the nation of China, manufactured so many solar chips or solar panels I think this was about 4 or 5 years ago. They actually produced 51 gigawatts of solar panels. So they printed so many solar panels they could beat out 51 nuclear power plants.
Yep, they're leading the way. China is. We used to.
This year, they're trying to go up 80% more. So this is it's fantastic. And what's interesting about the energy fields, you know, they're fighting over oil in the Middle East, but this basically almost free solar,
yeah,
is beating out oil and gas. Out here in California, we've got so many Priuses, you can't believe it. And the air is cleaner. You've got they're quieter. There's less, you know, maintenance problems.
You're absolutely right, David. I got to go because I want to get one more caller
sure.
Before my time ends here. Pete in Asheville, North Carolina, you got about 30 seconds. Go.
Hey, Mark, you're absolutely right when you called our tweet of a tweeting president, the moron. Everything is undoing. Everything is disassembling. Everything is full of fear. Modern day conservatism is just an ideology of fear. Run to your guns and be afraid, and let him take care of it. When it comes to anything in life, Mark, you got to consider the source. And from the inception of this man's campaign, there's been nothing but insults. There's been nothing but infantile behavior, accusatory behavior.
And I'll tell you the interesting thing, Pete. When I talk to Republicans in private, every one of them knows he's a liar. Every one of them knows he's an idiot, a moron. They're scared. They're nervous about him. Even people who voted for him say, well, I wanted these conservative things. But even they don't trust him. They just are afraid to say it publicly. Thanks, everyone, for calling in. I will be back on Wednesday. Call in at that time, 3 o'clock.